My dear friends, first please allow me to say a few words of gratitude for inviting me to be with you this morning again. I believe I came here 2 or 3 years ago to your congregation. That time and this time I come with really joyful heart because this is a really a wonderful, wonderful congregation, so welcoming. And this place is so peaceful, especially on the day like this, on the sunny, beautiful, beautiful day. And I think that there is something very special about your congregation, the congregation that is open, that is welcoming. And I think that's, I believe that every faith, every religion should be that way. I personally believe that we are all God's children, and He loves us the same way. And probably when we go to meet Him, He will not ask us, what church did you go? Or even how many times? But really, what was in your heart? Were you welcoming? Were you kind to others? I believe that that's really what matters. Obviously, I don't want to say that religion is bad. Absolutely not. It should help us. It should help us to arrive to that understanding. What is really the most important in our lives? And really, I think that that could be experienced in your congregation. That spirit of friendship, spirit of welcoming, not spirit of kindness and forgiveness, and not a spirit of judgment. So it is really a pleasure to be with all of you again this morning. We want to talk a little bit this morning about the topic that we very often do not discuss, and that's the topic of our death. Death is just part of our human existence. We know that one day we will need to leave this earth and we will need to die. And death doesn't happen to people who are sick only or to selective people. It really will happen to all of us. Honestly, I don't know about myself. Maybe on my way home something happens and I'm cold and I will die. That's just part of our life. Sometimes we try to avoid talking about death, and it doesn't surprise, we do not talk about that sad event, that painful event. We usually do not discuss it, we want to postpone it. But if you really think about it, death, as I mentioned, is part of our human life, part of our existence, just like our birth. It's here. And it will happen. Sooner or later, it will happen. We all will go through this. We all will experience it. For majority of us, death is basically an enemy that we fight. It's an enemy that we do not want to talk. We want to conquer that enemy. So we will do everything possible in our life to be victorious over death. Death is considered also a failure, especially for those who work in medical field, for the doctors, for nurses. We have the patient who is dying and we do everything possible to save that patient. And it happens very often that we are not able to save the patient and the person dies. So the death is a failure. We are not able to win the battle, with death. And death is antithesis of life. Life is so beautiful, full of energy. Death is nothing, no energy. Death is sadness. Life is joy. Death, yes, is sorrow. I believe that it was Freud who said that death is like the root source of our human anxiety. And he says that our life would be much, much better, much, much happier if we didn't have that thought somewhere in the back of our heads that we will have to die. That's what causes us anxiety. If we didn't have that little bell that is ringing somewhere there, we would be much happier. We would enjoy life. But because we know that one day we will die, it causes us that anxiety. Dr. Bayak, I don't know if you were able to hear to his presentation when he was here last year in Mankato, talks about it, and he says the death, it's like a backdrop against which our life is projected. So we do many things in our life knowing that there is yet that death. And as I mentioned before, for majority of the people, death is something that we don't want, that causes us pain, causes us suffering. But death is not only that physiological event that causes our body to die. I really believe that death is very spiritual and very holy. One of the most intimate moments of our life. Christopher read the prayer of St. Francis, beautiful, beautiful prayer that ends that through dying we enter into the new life. So in a certain way, especially for those who believe, for the believers, death is actually the fulfillment of our life. Fulfillment of our human existence. I believe it was St. Teresa who said that our life here on earth is just a journey, it's not a destination. We are here for a while, and death allows us to enter into that destination. In other words, we live here for a while, and probably our life here on earth is so short, really compared to what is expecting us after the death. So death is like the gate through which we enter the new life, through which we are completely fulfilled again. Yes, this life is beautiful here on earth. Even our bodies are beautiful. Look how beautifully we are created. But we are not perfect yet. There are many things that cause the disruption in our body. That's why we are sick. We have different problems. With death, we believe that we will accomplish that perfection. Obviously, this one is just too small to understand it, how it will be, what it will happen, what we'll experience. We do not know. We try to imagine how it will be. But at this point, we are not able to understand it. But I believe that the death, again, despite pain, despite suffering, despite the tragedy, is something very intimate, is something very holy, something very special. And I've been with hospice for many years. I really have seen many people die, and just from my experience, putting aside all the studies that have been done, I really believe that death is a peaceful event or peaceful holy thing that happens with us. Again, we cannot understand it. The people who are close or who enter into that near-death experience can see certain things, can understand certain things, and maybe I will mention a little bit later that sometimes, for example, if you witness a death of your loved one, sometimes the things happened that are kind of not ordinary. Maybe they told you, oh, I've seen my parents who came to me, or I've seen that person, or Jesus came to me. And sometimes we're kind of skeptical about it. Those things are real for the dying patient, and they know much more than we even can understand. So death is part of our experience. We have to understand that the dying patients have very, very special needs. When we get close to our, facing our death, we have special needs that we need to recognize as family members, as friends, or as caregivers. If I ask you today, let's just imagine, and I don't want to cause you any anxiety, but let's just imagine that you go to the doctor tomorrow. And your doctor tells you, I'm very sorry, we have discovered that you have this type of cancer. And you most likely will live maybe a month, maybe 2 months. If you heard that sentence, what would you do? What would be important for you? Would you worry about, you know, gas going up to $3 or $4 again? Probably not. Knowing that you have only a month or two, what would you like to do with that time? We probably wouldn't worry again also about our roof that is leaking. That wouldn't be important. We wouldn't worry about many material things that were important for us during our life. We probably wouldn't worry about, you know, how the stock market is going, is up and down. That wouldn't be important. Now, maybe it is. What would be probably important for us would be to go back from the doctor's office and go back to our families and probably tell them that I love you. We probably would like to go to embrace our children or our grandchildren and kiss them and tell them, I love you. Maybe we would like to go to somebody that we offended or did something wrong and ask for forgiveness. That would be important. When we are faced with death or when we are faced with terminal illness, certain values in our life change. What was important before, during our regular life, when we were not affected by illness? Those things are much, much less important. What goes up in the importance is this sort of values. Values of love, forgiveness, relationship. And we have to recognize that when we deal with our loved ones who are dying or who are affected by terminal illness. I think that I would say that there are three special values that we all as humanity experience, or special needs that we experience as we are faced with terminal illness. First of all is value of meaning. We all look for meaning of our life. Dying patients and those affected by illness, they try to understand that situation. Why is that happening? What is the meaning of all of this? I was perfectly all right. I was well. I had that life. And now I have to leave this. Everything is destroyed. And very often, dying patients struggle with that, with the meaning of life, meaning of what is going on. And I think that we need to be so sensitive and to remember that people experience that. Some people who have difficulties finding that meaning, you know, enter into certain despair, enter into certain depression, because suddenly everything is lost, everything crashed. Nothing makes sense with that. So we all have those issues with the meaning. We also have questions about our value. Let's say when I was well, I had time to spend with my kids or with my grandchildren. I took them to different things. We had so much time together. I did so many things for them, or I did so many things for my church and for others. Now I'm dying, and now I'm in bed, sometimes not even able to move our hands or legs. I'm not as beautiful as I was before. My appearance is completely different. There are some people who come into the room and are not even able to recognize me. What is the value of all of that? Why do I continue to live? What is the value of my existence? And if we are not with those people in those moments, again, they enter into that despair. They don't want to leave. They lose hope. They don't want to live anymore sometimes. So we are called to gently guide them through that process, help them to resolve those needs that they have. When we are dying, we have the need of being in relationship with others. We don't want, or majority of the people do not want to be alone. We want to be connected. We want to be part of, let's say, of, of family, part of the church, part of the congregation. We do not want to be alone. It is important for us, for every congregation, to know who is affected in your congregation by illness or by, you know, those who are dying. We are called to connect them, to provide or to respond to the meaning that to that need that they might have. Sometimes we need to ask, you know, how are the things maybe with your family? How are the things with your church? Do you need any help from me? How can we do it? Sometimes it's just really enough to go to the patient who is dying, maybe who have been in the nursing home for many years, and tell them, you know, John or Norma, you know, we are praying for you. Or I was in church this morning and we had a special prayer for you, and I want to tell you that you are part of our congregation. And sometimes just these simple words bring that hope, that people feel connected, that they are not alone, that they are important. Another need that the dying patient or those affected by illness have is the need of understanding. When we are affected by illness, sometimes we decide that we do not want any other treatment. We know that we are dying. We don't want any other treatment. We don't want to go through chemo that would take all that quality of life away from us. Instead, we prefer to spend time with our kids. Sometimes families have a problem because they said, gosh, my mom or my dad, they are giving up. We can do this and we can do that, and they don't want anything. They are just simply giving up. Sometimes we do not recognize that the patient affected by terminal illness, they need that time. It's not about giving up. It's really them requesting to have that special time of preparation, special time, special quality time that they can spend with their loved ones. And really, in hospice, if you work with hospice, very, very often the families would struggle with that. You know, we would like our dad to go through this radiation and chemo, but he doesn't want to. What's wrong with him? And we do not recognize that it is a need. People have that need for the time, for the preparation. So instead of spending my time, you know, through the procedure or chemo that does not promise me much, that I'm dying anyway, I have the terminal illness. Instead, all of that, I would prefer to have that time, maybe for myself, maybe so I can spend it with my loved ones. So that's another need that people have, to be understood, to be respected. So we respect their decision. So we are with them. And I think if we do that, they feel much better because they know, okay, my kids, we are on the same page. My kids understand me. If the family doesn't understand, you know, it causes you that suffering that, you know, I would like to do something else. My kids want me to do something else. And there is kind of disagreement. So the need for respect, need for understanding. Another need that dying patients experience is the need of being included in the decision making, especially those patients who are not able to talk, who are not able to express themselves. Those patients who are you know in bed and cannot do much. Not that long ago, we had a patient in our hospice program. This lady was in bed at the nursing home, and one day when I was visiting with her, she said, "You know, please tell my brother not to come and not to visit me again. I don't want to be here with me." And we started talking. And I asking her a question, and she told me that, no, my brother comes with his wife, and they go into the corner, and they whisper something among themselves. I don't know what they are talking about. Why am I not included in that conversation? And they probably were doing it probably from the goodness of their heart. Maybe they didn't want her to know. But it looked like that person was left aside. There were others trying to make decision about her, not including her. And she felt, who am I? Why don't they talk to me? Why am I not a part of that conversation? Sometimes we fail. We fail to include them in those decision-making. And you probably know that the person even who cannot talk, sometimes the person who is like a comatose, they can hear everything we say around them. Sometimes it looks that way, that, you know, there is no response from them, but I think it was stated scientifically that hearing is the last thing that we lose, last sense that we lose as we die. So sometimes it's just a good idea, even if the person doesn't respond, to go gently touch the person and talk to them and tell them what we are going to do or what we decided to do, what you like to do. Or just tell the person, you know, I hope that you would agree with this that we want to have, that we want to do. The need to be understood, the need to be included. Another need that dying patient have is that need of understanding, so they are understood. As I mentioned before, there are many things that happen with dying patient that are real to them and that are difficult for us to understand. As patient enter into that near-death awareness, I personally believe that like part of them, it's still in this material world. Another part of them, it's already there on the other side. And they are present here, and yet they have the vision of seeing things or experiencing things that we are not able to understand. And we have to respect that. So like I mentioned before, a mother came to me, and we talk. She told me about certain things. Or Jesus came to me and told me something. That's real for dying patient. We cannot tell them, you know, oh, you know, you're just hallucinating, or that's medication that works on you. We need to recognize that. We need to know that. I recently wrote an article about things that I experienced that many people, for example, struggle with a dying loved one. Is, for example, when sometimes we have dying patient who would take all the clothing away from them. They want to be naked, basically. And sometimes it is very stressful for the kids to see their parents in that state being naked. And patient would pull everything away, you know, sheets, you try to cover the patient, they don't want anything. And I believe that what might happen, there might be obviously the physical reason, it could be rash or their skin could be irritated why they don't want that. But I also believe that when we are ready to face God, who is completely perfect, who is pure, sometimes that closing, it's like a barrier between me and between my Creator. So sometimes people take that away. They want to face their Creator just like they were born. So that sheet that is covering them sometimes, it's like a thing that, like that barrier between them and God, and they don't want to. And sometimes we just, again, I'm just telling that for us to be sensitive, to be aware, to be respectful, that those things happen. And we just need to respect that. We need to recognize it. We need to help them understand that that's okay. That's okay. And many other things that happen that we need to be very, very sensitive. Another need that dying patients sometimes, yes, that they need to be connected with nature, for example. There are some dying patients who want to be, for example, who want to go outside, who want to see the sunshine. Usually they are in bed, maybe in the nursing home, in the house. They sometimes, when we are dying, we want to be part of this creation, part of that nature. So sometimes we want to be outside. We want to feel the sunshine on us. It is important for us to remember that and to provide that. Another important need that patient experience is simple, the need of touch, of being touched. There are some patients, again, who could be irritated, and we need to be very careful. But sometimes they need to be touched, and the touch is the way of connecting with the reality. Sometimes dying patients do not know where they are. Sometimes they are comatose. So that the touch allows them to understand that they are here, that they are connected, that they are part still of this life. Touch, voice, the gentle talking to them. And probably there are many other issues that dying patients, many other needs that dying patients have. I really just want to stress that we need just to be very sensitive. We need to be sensitive to those needs that they have. Sometimes we would like to project on others what we know or what we experience and like to tell them everybody is different. God created us in a beautiful way and put part of His divinity into each every one of us. And we are different, and we have to respect that. Just recently, I met with a man whose wife died, and he was struggling because there were some neighbors who came to him and telling him what to do, and they told him, get rid of all her stuff. And he didn't want to. He wanted to keep that. And that poor man really struggled, because others were telling him what to do, and he didn't want to do that. And sometimes we are that way, that we would like to project on others. We need to respect everybody's individuality, and every person is different. And again, that this dying experience, it's a holy time. It's such a sacred time, such a precious time to everybody. What could be more important? Obviously, when we are born, maybe when we get married, when we have a first child. And then when we die, this is such an intimate time, such a holy time. And we as friends, as caregivers, as church members, fellow parishioners, need to recognize that. And, I'm part of hospice program. Hospice is that wonderful organization who really tries to recognize those needs of dying patients and who tries to change the difficult and dark experience of death and dying into something more positive. So the patient and the family see it as a holy moment, as a holy event. And hospice is that wonderful organization who would walk the dying journey with patient and the family together, teaching them what to do, teaching them what to expect. Because sometimes we are lost. We never had a death experience before. We don't know what to do. So there is hospice that can really help us, who can really make, again, this difficult experience, change it into something more meaningful. And like today, I go to different churches, I go to many other places, I talk to people about hospice, that there is help. And the service is basically free because it's paid by Medicare or Medicaid, or most of the insurance have hospice benefit today. So people really can benefit from that. Very often people would like their loved ones to die at home, and they don't know what to do. They don't know if they would be able to do that. And with hospice help, they are able to care for their loved ones in their home. So the person dies at home in the place that is most most, you know, meaningful love for that patient. I probably stop, and I would be happy to answer any questions if you might have.
When Chris was introducing you, he was telling that you had experience in other countries with hospice program. Has that been going on in other countries many years before it hit home here in the United States?
No, I mean,
we cared for our loved ones in their home for years and years. It wasn't referred to as hospice as such, but I guess I'm kind of interested in how it operates in other countries or if you've been exposed to a lot of that.
Well, hospice, the concept that we have presently, it's relatively new. It started in England, actually. It started in England and it spread. It came to the United States, I would say, in the 50s, in the 60s, and really took over in the 70s. But before that, the hospice concept that we have presently did not exist. I worked in Italy with hospice with the Sisters of Mother Teresa, and that concept was a little bit different. Because at that time, that hospice didn't have any help from the government. Here we have the government, who really Medicare, who pays for the services. We basically would take the patients from the streets, those who were dying, those who didn't have families, those who were homeless. That was the place for them.
You had a facility.
Yes, exactly. We had a facility. Yeah. It was connected with the Sisters of Mother Teresa of Calcutta. Yeah, she founded that house and Gregor's house, and the sisters were working there and basically going again to the streets and bringing homeless to the people. But in many countries, hospice care is now just really taking off, but I would say within last 10 years. Before that, That ministry very often was connected with religious orders. There were many religious orders or religious congregations who were basically dedicated themselves for the care of the dying, and they would provide that care. And now it's changing, and I really predict, that's kind of my prophecy, in the sense that one day every dying patient will have hospice care. Or majority of the patients will die of hospice care.